I'm conscious that there are lots of people joining us today who know the ins and outs of screen sector skills issues in great detail. And there are also lots of people who are from a lay community who don't know that. So, and some of you may not even know who we are. So for those of you who don't know us, the IWA is Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through policy research and advocacy. Our online and print publications, this is the latest copy of our magazine, The Welsh Agenda. And we provide platforms for robust comment and debate and our agenda setting events like today. We're a membership organisation with membership right across the country and far further afield too. We're funded by our members, the events that we run ourselves and independent trusts and foundations. This is the second in our series of four events in our IWA Cardiff Media Summit 2021 series. That's quite a mouthful. We began yesterday with a high-level discussion about the state of play in Wales's media, rooted in the findings of our new media audit. That report will be published soon, and audio and video of yesterday's event and all these events will be available via our website if you want to catch up or share with colleagues who weren't able to attend. We'd like to thank the University of South Wales, who's kindly sponsored our new media audit, and the members of the IWA of our media advisory group for their invaluable assistance with both the media audit and the summit. Today's event looks at the importance to Wales's valuable screen sector of investing in skills and focuses on the findings of Clwstwr's Screen Work 2020 report. Our third event, tomorrow afternoon, is looking at news in Wales, who creates it, who reports it, and who we can trust to provide our factual reporting. Finally, our fourth event next Thursday will focus on S4C and its strategic vision for its future. You can still sign up for both two remaining events on our website. A healthy media in any nation means focusing on three things. First, our facts. We need news in Wales to help inform people and let them make their own minds up about the decisions and actions of those in power, particularly in our devolved parliament and government. Second, our fictions, the representation and portrayal of Wales and our communities in all their diversity needs to improve. We still don't see our stories told on screen, and this shapes how we understand ourselves, our past, present, and future. The stronger and more rooted our creative sectors become, the more likely it is that those productions will come to exist. Third, our rules. Media regulation was designed for a different age. The powerful entities we need to regulate today simply didn't exist when the legislation was drawn up. This means it's often not quite clear what rules, if any, have been broken, or indeed who could even enforce them. Wales should have a strong voice within the UK for an up-to-date approach to regulation. Underpinning all three of these things is the need to invest in media skills and supply chains. Wales needs a comprehensive and cohesive strategy for future skills in the media sector, one where we are absolutely clear what good looks like. Far improved diversity, security of employment, and meeting the increasing demands for more production to be made in Wales off the back of our recent successes. In a moment, our two guest presenters will talk us through the findings of their recent research into this important topic. We'll then have a panel discussion, and there'll be an opportunity for all of you to submit questions for that session, as well as feed in your views via a DuPoll on what the IWA and our partners should do next on our media policy work. And we're going to put that DuPoll link in the chat now too. So let me introduce our first speakers. Ruth McElroy is Professor of Creative Industries and Head of Research at the University of South Wales, where she's also a co-director of the Centre for Media and Culture in Small Nations. Ruth is also co-director of Clwstwr. Ruth, do put your video on and join the conversation. And Faye too, please. Faye Hannah is a research fellow at the University of South Wales, specialising in screen industries, workforce, policy and access. Welcome to you both, Ruth and Faye, and I'm going to hand over to you now for about 20 minutes for our for your presentation on Screenwork 2020. Thank you.
Thank you, Ariel. Thank you so much, Ariel. Good afternoon, everybody. It's a real pleasure for Faye and myself to be able to share with you the fruits of some labour for the past few months. Before I get started, I do just want to say thank you very much to the IWA for giving us this opportunity, both for launching our report, but also for hosting such a wonderful panel of speakers. We're both really looking forward to the conversations that are to come. We would also very much like to thank our funders, the Arts and Humanities Research Council, and thanks also to the screen industry, education and training providers who gave of their time so generously, both in completing our survey and in giving us time to interview them during what was an incredibly difficult period of time, during the pandemic. So a heartfelt thanks. Personally, I would also like to say a very heartfelt thanks to Faye Hannah, who has been absolutely brilliant in conducting this research through a pandemic and has really brought a tremendous passion as well as expertise and experience to the research. So I'm hugely grateful to her for that. Okay, so Screenwork 2020. The Cardiff Capital Region is, I think, a major success story for Wales in many, many regards, demonstrating significant growth and increasing reputational gains as a place to make quality screen content. From what had been a low base, the region has grown to become home to hugely popular, widely exported and award-winning productions, from Doctor Who to Sherlock to Casualty, His Dark Materials, Keeping Faith, I Am Not a Witch, Time Carnage, Craith Hidden and so many more. This is a priority sector for Welsh Government in terms of GVA, and Creative Wales estimate that the creative sector as a whole has a turnover of more than 2.2 billion annually, an increase of 40% since 2010. So our research shines a spotlight for the first time on the workforce training and education needs for the screen industries. And by that, we are referring to film, television, games, animation, post-production and VFX. Our footprint is the Cardiff Capital Region because of our funder and through Cluster, which is an R&D initiative and programme specifically within the Cardiff Capital Region. This is the largest, most representative piece of research focusing on specific sectoral needs. Our research finds a screen industry and an education and training sector that is not held back by a shortage of talent or indeed a lack of initiatives. What it does lack, however, is a coherent, ambitious and cohesive skills strategy to sustain the sector in the longer term. The drive to leverage inward investment has not been aligned to a skills and workforce development strategy that works across both scripted and non-scripted content production. Skills, we argue, is the vital missing link. There's a real risk here then, and that risk is not in some distant future, it's a reality now. Securing coherent progression routes from schools through further education to higher education into the industry is imperative. But it's also vital to start investing in our mid-career talent so that we enable them to become leaders in their fields with ambitions to produce content that we've hardly yet dreamed of. A small nation like Wales cannot afford to waste its people's talents and recruit only from communities of privilege. This makes no business sense, nor does it meet the aspirations of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. So we come to this research with the benefit of an advisory group from Cluster, and we would like to thank all of the members of the advisory group who have steered us. We'd also like to point out that the data collected here was not seeking to measure the impact of COVID-19. However, all of our research had to be pivoted and our data collection happened entirely during the pandemic. And we will therefore touch on some of the findings that have been shaped by the pandemic. I think in brief, what we would say is we discovered just how precarious this sector is and what some of the inequalities are. They became so much more vivid as a consequence of the pandemic. The methodology we used was a mixed methods approach. This entailed desk research, some company research, which was quite tortuous, I think it's fair to say. That involved a lot of SIC code cleansing. So one of the major problems that we have is a lot of the data that you would want to have to make policy on the basis of just doesn't exist in Wales. An awful lot of reports that claim to judge what the skills or the workforce or the economic value of this sector is, when you dig down, actually you find very little Wales-specific data in there. We also conducted 23 in-depth stakeholder interviews, and our census, which is geared both to the production sector and to the training sector, gathered 112 responses. So what we've tried to do is to try and visualize, because both Faye and myself are pretty visual thinkers, we've tried to visualize what we think some of the sort of ingredients for success might actually look like. What would a good screen sector possibly have? What would the components of it be? And this is what we've tried to come up with. And what we're going to do in our presentation today is to take you through some of our key findings, to then talk through each of these thematic areas, and then to offer some potential recommendations of how we can go about making things better. And I think it's worth emphasizing that pragmatism. Neither of us have come into this research purely as an academic exercise, though we are both academics. The point is to actually get things done. So at that point, I'm going to hand over to Faye to begin with some of our key findings.
Thanks, Ruth. And hello, everyone. Okay, so first of all, I'm going to talk through these, but we're going to do a bit more of a deep dive a bit later on. So we're going to talk a bit about how a skills strategy is something that underpins everything that we found within this research. Underinvestment in senior leaders, and we found little succession planning as part of this. And I think it goes without saying that a sector that's highly dependent on freelancers, where precarity is endemic and training is limited, and we'll come on to talk a little bit more, both in the findings and recommendations in a bit more detail, what that looked like, and hopefully give you a sense from our interviews in particular of and respondents what that was. So as you all know, it will come, I'll keep saying this, it will come as no surprise to you that it's a sector compromised of a majority of micro SMEs that lack HR and training capabilities and little support to enable change. And I would argue that it is a surprise because we haven't had the data before. And we all keep hearing this, that it is the first time that we've had this in particular data. So informal recruitment dominates. It's integral to why the sector is not diverse and inclusive. And this is a really important point and cross-cutting theme that ran through all of the research. And stakeholders can drive change using levers such as funding, but scale, breadth and cohesion is lacking. As you've heard Ruth touch on, there's a data deficit. We just don't have the data. We have what people think it is, and hopefully we can confirm or deny some of that through the research and evidence that we're providing. But we literally haven't had data that represents the industry in any meaningful way previously. There's a range of skills needs that we've identified that I'll talk through a little later, including some specific to Welsh language production, where I think Wales does absolutely differ to the rest of the UK. And we're going to talk a little bit about the key findings around innovation, and that we require skills for innovation, little strategic recruitment for innovation capabilities. And I hear this a lot, but there's a disconnected sector. Subsectors are still siloed to a certain extent. And I think we'll talk about some of the reasons that we found behind that. We jump from 10 to 12. There is no secret 11. That's just my numbering. So COVID-19, as we know, quite seriously amplified the precarity, which is endemic and means the sector is at risk. So anything that was urgent before is absolutely urgent now. And we'll come on to talk a bit more about that. So for those of you who don't know the characteristics of the screen sector more broadly. So again, television dominates and high-end television production. So our census, it makes up a particularly large percentage at 45.3%, is television film at nearly 20% of the companies and organisations who responded to our census. games at 4.7%, and post-production, quite a significant response within that, which is something I think we already knew, but it's good to have that figure there. So you heard Ruth talk a little bit about the industrial coding data and that what that research revealed. There are 230 organisations operating in the screen sector across CCR. And company structure is important. So how many are freelance and self-employed within our sector? So from our respondents, we were looking at 41.1%. And limited companies, 54.4%. Again, when we come on to talk about COVID, the reason that I've noted here that 18.9% of all census respondents were limited companies, sole director, is particularly relevant in how, in some ways, that they have been missed and lacking in terms of support in the current climate. And the number of sectors. Again, no surprise. Micro enterprises, there is 61.1%, less than four individuals, and 18.5% less than 10. So, I mean, there is a significant number of small organisations who work on a project-to-project basis. And I think that's particularly important as we come on to talk about recruitment and sustainability and developing practices. The size of organisations does matter. So, skills gaps. So I think over the last few years, we talked a lot about skills gaps and what's missing. And I think there's been a lot of hearsay about what we all know what's missing. I know we don't have enough editors. I know we don't have enough this. But actually being able to get people to really pin down what it is that their gaps are has been really key. So this slide is within the report for anyone who is going to look. And there's one thing to say about skills shortages or needs is that they don't stand still. So this could well have changed since the data in September. And that is why it's extremely important that this data is collected regularly. And again, we'll come on to talk about that. But there's a couple of themes really that I think run through this, which I'd like to briefly cover. So there's obviously technical and creative roles here. And anyone in the sector will probably be nodding their head saying, yes, absolutely. And these have been coordinated across sectors. There's specialist skills that are hard to train for, things like art department, costume, makeup, those types of craft skills. But really importantly, there's a lot of senior level skills that are lacking. And again, in terms of a cross-cutting theme, this cuts across recruitment, it cuts across training, and it cuts across skills needs more broadly. So this sense that when we go on to talk about there isn't enough training, support, development and progression for senior leaders in the industry, this is not necessarily a problem that is going to be in the future. This problem is now, because these are the skill shortages that people have cited now: a lack of showrunners, a lack of series producers, a lack of development producers. So it's really key that anything we do addresses this now. Okay, so I'm going to whiz through these. So business leadership skills, I think I've just said this. So starkly, so one of the most sort of stark stats that we had, only 5.5% of all training organizations offer training to senior level professionals. And when we talk about training and skills, our first thought is often to go to entry level skills and those looking to get into the industry. So even less, 0.6% of all training was focused on senior level coaching with sponsorship. So it's really quite stark in terms of making sure that there is succession planning and sustainability in the industry. There are good initiatives, there is things happening, but it lacks longevity and resource. There isn't continuous funding, and that's really, really important, so that training organisations in particular aren't working on a project-to-project basis that stops them from developing activity. So freelancers, as we know, have really suffered the brunt of COVID-19. 60% of all our census responders were freelancers or sole directors. And really, really importantly, 41.5% of freelancers were parents or carers. So anyone out there who's homeschooling at the moment will be really feeling that right now. It's a reality, and it's a reality that's happening right now. So 22% of all organisations had their work cancelled due to caring responsibilities during the pandemic in the screen industries in the Cardiff Capital Region. And 60% of freelancers reported being paid for work in more than one role, which makes it very difficult to categorise freelancers, because I think there was very few instances where they just did one thing specifically, potentially maybe a makeup artist and those types of things. But they had many roles during one period that we were looking at. And this sense throughout every individual that we talked to is that they were responsible for their own training and development, which has been supported by academic writing for some time now, that their career development is something that they drive themselves. It's not something that's invested in, even though they are working more broadly within the industry. So progression from education and training in particular. So we've wanted to give you a bit of a sense and a feel of this. So see, these are some of the quotes that came out of our interviews here. And it's very much looking at the lack of kind of structured ways of moving from further education, higher education into industry, which is something that we are extremely aware of. But that kind of brokering that happens often formally and informally between industry and education and training often happens where there is individuals who are fantastic individuals who are brokers between the two, and they know industry and they know education, and they're able to do that matching process. And this is kind of a well-known phenomenon in the industry, but there are questions around how sustainable that approach is in building and developing a sector. We also saw a lot of really fantastic work going on between FE and HE, and lots of targeted support. So USW's work with Bad Wolf, there was a lot of really great activity going on with Cardiff and Vale College, but it's about maybe having some more structure to that work. Thank you. I think this is really key. So when we talk about diversity in particular, or inclusion, or making sure that our industry is open to as many people as possible, this map in front of me shows training providers who are mapped out in the Cardiff Capital Region, which is the whole of the map, higher education and further education. So 50% of all training activity is delivered within Cardiff, Newport and the Vale of Glamorgan. And the other 50% is obviously further afield. But when we're looking at it, kind of really always, this seems very stark to me in terms of when we're looking at making sure that our industries are accessible to people beyond those areas, it would seem that there is broadly a lot of further education colleges in particular who it could benefit the industry to work from. So it to work with, sorry. So it's clear that that's where production is concentrated, and that makes the most sense. However, I think more broadly, stronger partnerships between further education and industry was something that we would recommend. And final one from me, I think, because it seems like I talked an awfully long time. So recruitment and career progression, of all the stats, this is the one that really stood out. So 86% of independent screen industries organisations in the Cardiff Capital Region reported recruiting for sectoral roles through word of mouth. If we're looking at building and developing an inclusive sector, then it would strike me that maybe word of mouth wasn't the best way to go to go about that in terms of who we know and what we know. It speaks to the fact that production companies and organisations in screen are short of time, they're short of resource, and they're short of money, which are all reasons that it becomes much easier when you're on a project-to-project basis and you're crewing up to make sure that there is low risk in terms of who you bring on, how you bring on, and the job that they can do in a very short period of time. However, that will not sustain an inclusive screen industry in the Cardiff Capital Region. We talked to a lot of people about their recruitment and career progression and their experience, and this kind of acceptance, I suppose, this tacit acceptance that there was no structured career progression anymore was really, really strong. And that was very much around the phrase, when I was at the BBC, there was, they put me on a senior leadership course. I had maternity leave. I did an MA. There were not just one, two or three. This came from a lot of survey respondents. And it kind of felt quite sad that structured support in terms of training development that sustains people's careers was very much seen as something historic that doesn't happen anymore, particularly around parents, carers, maternity leave, things that are becoming increasingly important in the pandemic. And then the idea, I'm sure you've all heard this before, you need to see it to be it. That's absolutely something in terms of representation that there aren't many visible examples in Wales, although they do exist. So I think, Ruth, anything else you'd like to add around that in terms of recruitment and careers progression?
No, I think we should probably move on, but thanks, Faye. So if I move on to innovation, and the reason why we particularly were keen on dealing with innovation cross-sector is two things. Firstly, Clustered is, of course, an R&D programme, which is all about screen innovation in the region. But it's also that we understand that we're at a point of convergence where innovation across the different sectors of the screen industry globally, not just in Wales or in the UK, is really important. So what, on the basis of this research, we would argue is that innovation requires skills for innovation. And yet what we found was that there was little strategic recruitment for innovation capabilities. So for example, when in an interview I asked, when you recruit, do you put an R&D person onto your panel? If you indeed have an R&D person, quite often the answer was no. Gosh, should we? I suppose we should. So there's a sense in which that innovation is not a kind of core skill set. It's not part of the recruitment machinery, if you like. We also found, as Faye alluded to earlier, a disconnected sector. People in games were often not familiar with people in film who were not familiar with people in animation or in VFX, for instance. And I think that in Wales, there's a bit of a danger that because we live in a small nation, that we sort of assume everyone is connected. So I think one of the main gains would be to really pull people together and to bring these sectors together, because we can see that that is where increasing economic value is growing. We can see particularly, I think, in terms of the game sector. You know, the game sector has burgeoned, obviously, and has in many ways continued very much through the pandemic because of how much of that production work is done in people's homes. So we found that actually the impact of COVID was far, far less on games, for instance. We also found little evidence of an innovation strategy within most of these firms. And I think that comes down to both resource, a lack of resource, and leadership. So, a quote here that we've got from a producer, we'd love to have another producer. We'd also love a secretary. You know, in our day-to-day lives and getting the job done, having an R&D person would feel like a luxury that we'd love to afford, but it's quite a way away. However, the person also reflects that having worked with Clustered, if you'd asked me that question last year, I wouldn't have even known why I needed an R&D person. So for me, that's a message that change can happen incrementally and some small steps can deliver significant change. We don't need to change everything to be able to begin on the journey. I think one of the other massive challenges and why R&D is so problematic within this sector is there's a kind of disconnect between the way in which the commissioning industry works, particularly in television, and how IP is generated. And that's why I think that we saw much more R&D concentration in games, animation, and post-production, as opposed to film and TV production. So overall, the single biggest finding, I think, that we had is the absence of a strategy. And I've put some quotes here to give you a bit of a sense of that, where time and again, when we asked people in interviews, you know, what do you think of the strategy? Is there a strategy? Where is it? I don't know where it is. And I think it's important to emphasize that that was coupled with a real appreciation of the work that Creative Wales has been doing during this COVID pandemic. So it was a sense of we need to get going rather than a sort of indictment of current action. I think what was very clear, however, was that one of the main reasons why you need a strategy is that we need to know what the gaps are, and the gaps will change. This is a very, very fast growing and developing sector. So what's true in 1 year in one subsector will not be true in 6 months' time for that subsector, let alone another subsector. So we need that really global view. So finally, some of our recommendations, the things that we think that need to happen. Obviously, we're going to argue that we think we need a screen sector strategy, one that is genuinely ambitious, that is sustainable and inclusive, but perhaps most importantly of all is cohesive, that brings schools, FE, HE, industry, and the retention, not just the access into the industry, to the forefront. We think there's a need to communicate a clear vision of what good looks like and how to build towards it. And we need to have a drive to monitor workforce skills and training so as to drive action and real priorities for investment. We can't do it all, so we need to know where to begin and what's most important. I think all of that needs to be evaluated transparently and openly. And I think we need to invest in people from both entry level through to business leaders, what we've called the skills ladder. We'd clearly need to seize on the opportunity in Wales to, you know, use the change in the Welsh curriculum to improve careers advice from schools onwards. And we need to incentivise and secure progression routes into the industry. We need leadership. We need to invest in business leaders and commercialisation capabilities across all subsectors. We need to innovate to connect for convergence. And be innovative in how funding works with the grain of the screen sector, not against it. And finally, we've got to be more inclusive. I think there was a very strong sense here of wanting to bring about change. We need to identify the levers to drive change, and we need to support better practice. I think I should probably end it there and hand back over to you, Oriel.
Thank you very much indeed, Faye and Ruth. There's a huge amount of stuff there for us to try and unpick now and explore. We're going to open up to the panel discussion now, with followed by Q&A, which will focus very much on what needs to happen next. Throughout the Q&A, either issues that participants raise in the chat function will be fed through to the panellists or through the Q&A function. So do please feel free to use either. And do carry on using the chat room. I know it's quiet so far. There's a lot to take in at the moment. I'm also going to ask you, though, as our audience, to do a little bit of work. So could you please complete this sentence? To support skills in Wales's screen sector, the next Welsh government should. And we'll put that phrase in the chat too, and then we'll share your ideas with the panel for their comments and afterwards. And remember, there's a Dupol then thing for you to fill in as well about what decision makers in Wales should be prior to 2021 and beyond. So could I ask all the panellists please to put their videos back on for the discussion now. So I'm very much, I'm very delighted to introduce a really fantastic panel. Michelle Matheson, who is BBC Creative Diversity Partner. Welcome, Michelle. Very glad you could join us. Jodie Langley, who's Head of Sector Development at Creative Wales. Hi, Jodie.
Hi, thank you.
Lynyrd Whelan, Executive Manager of TAC, which supports freelancers in the industry. Welcome, Lynyrd. And Professor Doris Eichhoff, who is Professor of Cultural Economy and Policy at the University of Glasgow. Welcome, Doris.
Hi,
great. Great to have you all with us. And I am, I've talked before, both in today's and yesterday's session about, we've got a mix of both specialists and non-specialists in the audience today. So if I stop you to explain a phrase or an acronym, do please forgive me. We want to make this as open a conversation as possible. And I've seen, and I know you've seen the list of participants too. So I'm going to ask you the magic wand question first of all. And Jodie, I'm going to come to you first with this. If you had the power to do two things tomorrow to improve screen skills for Wales's screen workforce, what would they be?
Okay, so I think the first thing we need to do is to make sure that people in schools are aware, or the children in schools are aware, of this as a career opportunity. So, you know, if I could do anything tomorrow, it would be to make sure that every child in every school in Wales is aware of this sector as a real career option, and their parents, to be honest. You know, and also how to get there, you know, what they would need to do to get there. So what qualifications they would need, etc. So I think that would be the first thing for me.
Yeah.
I think the second one probably would be for a clear career pathway for people in the industry in Wales. I think we need, and the, you know, the findings of the survey have just reinforced this, to be honest. There's lots of stuff going on, but we need less fragmentation of the training available. You know, people need to know where to go and for what. And we need to make sure that our Wales-based talent are aware of the opportunities available to them in Wales, and that we're not losing people out of Wales.
The support that already exists. Thanks very much indeed. Right. Lynid, I wonder if you are going to take us a bit further up the age range now in terms of moving away from younger people. What would be your magic wand solutions?
Well, I have two. TAC is the Trade Association of Independent Production Companies in Wales. And
thank you.
We run a training partnership with Asparalac, S4C. My magic wand questions are almost progressions of what we're already working on. So tomorrow, what I would like to see would be an inclusive Wales-wide training structure, which identifies the training needs and development throughout, from entry level up until senior manager and leadership roles. And then the second thing I would like would be a comprehensive, high quality pool of training providers who deliver in Welsh and English in all the fields where we identify skills gaps. I think Ruth and Faye both referred to, this is a changing landscape, but to be able to just dip into a pool of providers and pull out that training on a regular basis would be incredibly helpful.
Great, thank you very much indeed. Doris, could I come to you next, please? What would be your magic wand? What would you do tomorrow?
Two things, really. The first thing that strikes me as needed, if it were a magic wand indeed, and budget were not a problem, would be training bursaries. Because those 60% of freelancers and sole directors who are fighting for the survival of their companies at the moment, they're not going to be training themselves or anyone else in the near future. They are just going to be desperately clinging on, many of them. So a reassurance that if they wanted to go for training, which some of them would now have the time, if they're not working on productions, they might conceivably have training for that business skills gap that Faye outlined. They need the resources to do that. The second one is a bit left field, but bear with me. So I'm not a skills specialist. My area is diversity and inclusion, but my partner is a skills specialist, and he continuously keeps telling me that people only use 40% of the workforce's skills in the places where they would be needed. So on that assumption, there might very well be some skills in that workforce that are not currently put to the use that they should be. And I would take a gamble and encourage screen businesses in Wales to recruit without CVs for a year. And to rephrase, to question what skills and talent they really look for and how they look for them, and not through CVs, but through other means, and see what they discover.
So being far less prescriptive about what you think you're looking for and where you're going to find it. Yep. That's a very interesting idea.
As I said, left field, but if it's a magic wand, that would be my experience.
Yes, it's an extension of the blind recruitment, for instance, that a lot of organisations already do, than that we do. Michelle, could I come to you, please? What would be your two magic wand solutions.
Okay, so these are magic wands, but actually I think they could potentially work in real life. The Factual Fast Track Initiative, that is a collaboration with broadcasters, SC4, Channel 4, BBC, BBC Wales. It's a fabulous initiative to grow and supersize, and I think you've done that with series producers. I just think you could do it with APs to PDs across all genres, and also have the ability to track talent. So this would be in conjunction with what we've just seen about the skills audit, but it would be a really good way of tracking and developing talent. And I think I'm playing into everything that Lunid and Doris and Jody have already mentioned. And I think all the other sorts of grassroots initiatives and schemes that you've got is about having more, maybe more commercial interest, maybe getting people to sort of sponsor those schemes and potentially feeding into that fast track scheme. So like It's My Shout and things we do with Beacons and so forth. And the second, as I think drama has worked incredibly well in Wales in the sense of its outward message that come to Wales and make this, but I do think it would be good to have a long running daytime factual or factual entertainment series, returnable, high volume, where new talent has the opportunity to learn on the job. So was something that where I worked on ITV, which was Come Dine With Me for Channel 4, we could take work experience on 2-week periods. They would do their experience, go away, and then, you know, when a role came up and it was regular because people moved on really quickly, we would get them into work. So I know quite a lot of people who came in on a 2-week work experience with no experience. CV did not need to be looked at. It was just a case of, were you interested in the program? And they've gone on to be producers and series producers. So it can happen. So those are my two kind of one dish could work really wishes.
Okay, and can I just check, when you say APs and PDs, you mean assistant producers?
Assistant producers and producer directors, yeah.
Got it, well done. Thank you very much indeed, I'm pleased. Great, thank you for those suggestions. And I also want to start with a little bit of personal stuff from all of you, please, too, because I think often we can talk about, you know, we are talking about the deficits here and the gaps and what's needed on the one hand, and we're talking about where we want to get to. But could you just share with me, please, something that you have personally either accomplished or contributed to in relation to skills that you're particularly proud of? Let's just get some good practice floating around. What support was important to make that happen? And I'm going to go back in the same order as well. So Jody, could I come to you, please?
Thank you. This is quite a tricky one, to be honest, because I'm not, I'm overall responsible for skills as part of my portfolio, sure. But you know, there are people in my team who have direct responsibility for this. So I can't claim personal credit for any of what we've done, really. But I think since Creative Wales is a new organisation, as you know, we've been only up and running for less than a year. We had grand plans for skills last year, which was all kind of flipped on its head, really, with when COVID hit. So I think we, in all honesty, we've done less than we'd wanted to. But I think the one thing that we are proud of would be the way that we've brought the industry together this year. Actually, and kind of the stakeholder engagement. And I think for the first time, you know, we've got everybody around the table. You know, it's not perfect, our skills group. I know that we're still missing people, but, you know, we've got a lot of the industry around the table to start talking about all of this stuff, you know, and where we go with our skills strategy going forward. So I think that's the thing that we're most proud of, really.
Okay, thank you very much. And that's not, you know, that's something already, isn't it? Absolutely. Lynyrd, could I come to you, please?
Yes, the TAC training programme was started almost 4 years ago from a standing start. And I think the thing that I'm most proud of is that it's been built by listening to the members and identifying what they want and what they need. And that is how it's built. We've built it in partnership with Esperarac, S4C, to ensure that the broadcasters' needs and the sector's needs come together. This is going to be apparent as well in the future when S4C is training apprenticeships with the sector are being introduced imminently. I'm also very proud of the fact that last year we migrated onto Zoom straight away when the pandemic hit to avoid the training falling off a cliff. We adapted very quickly. The members came with us. It's open access training. So when I say members, I mean the people who've joined us. We almost doubled the number of delegates who attended training last year. And we also offered free spaces to freelancers so that people who did have that time were able to join us at no cost through this. And it was about 10% of the total attendees over the year were freelancers in the end. And interestingly, as well as the actual training, they were just happy to see people as well during that period.
Yeah, that contact is super important, isn't it, for us all and for freelancers in particular, I would imagine. Doris, how about you?
Well, my training initiatives are even further from the screen industries. But I think for me, what's always been important, whether it's students or whether I'm talking to industry, is to understand the system that you're in and understand that, yes, on the one hand, we do need the strategic initiatives that Ruth and Faye were talking about. But there is a point in making individual changes in how you recruit, how inclusive you are, what focus you put on skills. So I think that combination of, yes, it's the system, but yes, it's also my own initiatives and my own everyday actions, that instilling that attention in people.
That's a good reminder to us all that the details really matter, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think, they do. In that perspective. Michelle?
I would say I think it's about working with someone like Creative Wales, with Jodie, and if there is an organisation that's going to sort of coordinate things. I mean, I belong to the Talent Managers Forum, and that's UK-wide Talent Managers, and we talk about all sorts of issues to do with skills shortage or to do with how much people are getting paid. So we try and look at things that are coming up in the industry that are going to have an impact. And I think that it's something like that where you need to have to be across what's going on in production and to really get an understanding. And I think for me, it's about understanding what's needed and then being quite proactive in getting various stakeholders on board to enable that to happen. So it is a sort of really identifying what the crises are and then, you know, doing something together. And I think we all work better. I mean, this role that I'm in is a partnership role, and it's really great to work with various stakeholders, because actually we're in a climate where we all do need to work together, and it's proven just with COVID how important it is that we are on the same page.
I think we're going to come back later in the conversation, thank you for that, to the role of connectors across both sectors, but also within sectors and ways of and modes of operation too. But I want to bring us back to that big picture challenge that Screenwork 2020 has set out for us, because the top line question arising from Cluster's work here is a really simple one, which is how can we recruit, retain and develop the skilled workforce that our screen sector needs? And Michelle, I'm going to come back to you with this first question, so I'm just giving you a heads up now. And of course, really simple questions ready never ever have simple answers, if only they did. So let's just focus on what those different players can contribute, and the different players in all of this ecosystem. So Michelle, you know, the BBC's got a hugely important role to play in all of this. What role do you think it can play in bringing about change and supporting a sustainable skilled workforce? And are you doing enough? You know, how can we measure the effectiveness of what you're doing, and when will we see that change happen? What will it look and feel like to everybody?
Sure. Currently we have two areas that we're looking at: diversity and inclusion. So for my role now, it's 20%. All productions from April the 1st have to have 20% diversity within their production teams. And that is ethnicity, it's on socioeconomic and on disability. So out of those three, you can have two depending on what you make up of where you are. We're very adamant that that is going to be the baseline. And obviously we work with independents and smaller indies who may not have that, you know, those people to pull from. We're going to help and enable that to happen. So that's the first area. And
can I just ask how you're going to enable that to happen? What sort of practical support does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So practically we would talk to independents, we talk to commissioners, We put independence in front of commissioners if we think that what they're bringing forward is something really exciting. You know, obviously commissioners have the people that they go to, the companies that they work with, but they are also having that 20% target fixed to them. So they also have to ensure that every production that comes through has that 20% minimum. So for companies in larger cities and larger areas, you know, they'll have an array of talent that they can pull from other areas. It may not be the same. So we would work closely with those companies. We work closely with our commissioners to ensure that they're meeting the right talent and meeting the right companies. On the other side, we've got 100 mil, which is sat in commissioning for diverse led independence. So diverse led companies would be a company that has diversity quite high up in its editorial side. So you would have somebody who was Black, Asian, minority, ethnic, or someone who's disabled, or somebody who comes from a lower socioeconomic background. That would be the makeup of the company itself, or their content is authentic portrayal of a subject that they want to talk about, and it's also on-screen representation, which is also authentic. And the production team, which again, the 20% hits. You also have to have 20% in your production team. So in order for you to access that particular pot of money or fund, I should say, is that you would have to pitch your idea to the commissioner, and you would then be seen to say, well, I'm a diverse led indie because I have. And that's really how that would work. So there are two areas where we're looking to try and ensure that we're getting a real being diverse and inclusive with all the production companies that we work with, and also those companies that haven't necessarily been diverse in the past will now have a requirement that they have to step up with 20%.
So I've just got a follow-up, which is, who decides what's authentic?
Well, I think it's a case of the company, it's us, it's the commissioners. You know, it's an array of people looking at something and thinking that's authentic, that's telling the real story, whether it's your writers coming from a place where it's authentic to talking about characters or talking about contributors who have a real understanding. And it's not something that's just made up. It's something that's real and that's coming from them. So there are different ways of slicing that, and there's different ways of our productions and our commissioners working together, but ultimately it's going to be, we all know what we mean when we talk about authenticity. It's very difficult to sometimes describe it in detail, but you know when you see something and that rings true. So if you were doing something in North Wales, you would know what rings true about that area because you know it, and you would have, you know, you would take that out and work, you know, take it out and talk to people about the particular project you're bringing to, say, the BBC, and have that sort of data behind it as well. So there are all sorts of ways of looking at it, but I think we're just trying really hard to shift that dial a bit and to ensure that we become a much more inclusive broadcaster, and also to sort of lead the way for other broadcasters to follow in the sorts of programming that they do as well. Because it's, you know, on screen, we can say, oh yeah, that's great, we seem to be hitting the mark, but off screen,
and there's a lot, isn't there? There's a lot behind the scenes that, and it's a very good segue. And Lynnard, I must apologise. I know perfectly well that TAC represents independent production companies. It's one of those afternoon moments where your mouth doesn't say what your brain is thinking. So I do apologise. But you already, you know, you've talked already about supporting independent Welsh language sector through training. Could you share with us any specific challenges your members are facing in that particular area? And what more would you like to be able to do? And how would that really cohesive skill strategy make a difference to you?
Well, our training is sector wide. So it's mainly obviously based on members' needs. And most of our members do work through the medium of Welsh, although some don't. The challenges with Welsh language training are there in the supply and demand. You know, there is more demand than there is supply, especially in particular fields. So sometimes we have to go with the expertise rather than the language. The different kinds of training is where it becomes very, very focused, because you've got such a variety of training needs, from the technical to the creative to the practical to the theoretical, if you like. And then you've also got essential training, such as health and safety, yeah, such as safeguarding children and so on. And bringing all those together and putting a cohesive plan together to make sure that you get as many different kinds of training as you can in, but obviously supplied by a good provider. That's the balance of that is very tricky. And so again, we depend very much on what comes back to us from when we provide the training. So the feedback comes through, and then we just have to focus more specifically on industry matters, because what happens with a lot of general training in different fields is that you need also an industry perspective. Mm. So when you come down to brass tacks, such as, for example, you know, camera, sound, editing, and so on, you've got a set of skills that you can and then operate. But in perhaps in softer skills and other fields, you need to make it more specific to an industry, whereas it's just general training normally. So it's quite, putting those together is very specific, which is why tax training program is very much bespoke to those needs. But also what we do is work with as many training partners as we can, because the more we work with them to make them understand what the industry needs, the more they can provide the needs for people in all those different fields. And there is a huge variety of demand for training, as I said, from the technical to the creative and from entry level right up until senior management and leadership roles.
So presumably a really cohesive skills strategy would help prioritize what that training should be focused on in the first instance, and make it very clear to those providers what the match is.
Exactly that. And a skill strategy that goes top to bottom and breadth would, mm-hmm, that could be fed into, because I think there are a lot of good training providers out there, and sometimes we hear about them, sometimes we don't. The skills forum that Creative Wales has run has been tremendous in that sense, of a real feeling of who is around the table, who needs what. But what becomes more and more apparent is that there are more needs than there are suppliers.
So I'd be interested to hear from any training providers who are here with us today, just to share some of those challenges as well in the chat if you feel able to. But thank you again for the segue, Jodie. Great to hear feedback about Creative Wales. It's so positive, you know, a year in. I think the birthday of Creative Wales is in a couple of weeks' time, is that right? I think,
yeah,
we were really pleased that your colleague Geraint Evans was able to join us at our event yesterday, and I asked him about Creative Wales's view on skills, and he made it clear that it's something that he's very keen to prioritise. You know, we know it can sometimes jump off the bottom or drop off the bottom of the list of things where there are other issues around that. You know, we talked before, and Doris flagged it, around survival in particular, particularly in the last 10 months. But could you tell us in a bit more detail, please, about what Creative Wales are going to do in this area on skills in 2021 and beyond? What do you see as your main focus and the major needs that you can respond to?
I think the first one to respond to, really, and I can see that Robin has put the question in the chat, is whether we're going to, you know, have a skills strategy. So that's one of the recommendations, and that's one of the things that we probably would have had by now, is the truth, if we hadn't have been dealing with COVID all year. So absolutely, we see our role as developing that in partnership with industry this year. So that's probably the first thing at the top of our business plan for 2021.
Could I just talk to you a little bit about, I'm sorry, there's a bit of interference. I'm not sure it's my end or your end, but a bit about how you're going to do that across government, because there's so many touch points, aren't there, with education, with the skills partnerships, with obviously schools, as well as FE and HE colleges too, with the economy department too. Can you talk us through a little bit about that process, how that's going to happen? Because sometimes I think there can be a bit of this bit of government is doing this bit of government is doing this, you know, and there may be very good intention, but not necessarily much join up.
Well, Well, I think one of the benefits of being in government is that you've got direct access to all of these people. So that, you know, that's a positive that these people are our colleagues. So, and all of those different bits of government that you just mentioned are actually on our skills group. So we have the regional skills partnerships on there. We have our education colleagues. So I think it's just about making sure that we're, you know, we're talking to everybody really from day one. You know, obviously there's going to be lots of ministers involved in that as well, because we all have different ministers. But yeah, I think
that can complicate things a bit, can't it? Having different ministers in
sometimes, it can sometimes, but yeah, I think we're all, you know, they're already part of the conversation.
Okay. And I guess one of the things I wanted to ask is what sort of levers do you have today that you can use? And are there any levers that you want to develop over the course of the next year or so?
I think the key things for us really are to make sure that we've got the data that we need to be able to develop the strategy. So we've now got it for Cardiff City Region, and we are working with USW on expanding that to the whole of Wales. You know, I would imagine that there will be lots of similar themes emerging out of that, but you know, we can't just assume that. We need the data that backs that up. So I think the first thing we need really is this data set, which, you know, which is much wider than Cardiff City Region and gives us the information we need so that we can develop a proper comprehensive skills strategy for the whole of Wales. I think that, you know, that's the main thing for me really. And then following on from that, you know, making sure that we've got the correct membership on our skills group. You know, it's a big group at the moment. I think it's in excess of like 40 people. But I'm not sure whether we've got, you know, enough representation from all of Wales, for example. So that's something we're looking at the moment, is whether is the membership of that group and how we can structure that group going forward to get the most out of it, so that we, you know, we get the, you know, the stakeholder engagement that we need really to be able to do this properly, because we can't do it on our own. You know, we're 100% dependent on our partners in all of this.
Yeah, I think there is, I mean, I was going to come on to the role of partnership in this next, because, you know, it's a different way of working. And I know that there is a, you know, one of the positives that you've already alluded to that's come out of the last year is that you've got people around the table, because everybody's got a stake in what happens next, because it affects them personally, obviously. Yeah. But I'm also conscious from having read the report that, you know, COVID has affected film, TV, animation, games, VFX, very difficult to say that this time of day, and post-production in very different ways. You know, games have done really well, for instance. So how that looks is going to be very, very different. So prioritising within that, bearing in mind we're still in the middle of the global pandemic, hopefully not forever, you know, that's a very different context, isn't it? But I'm just, you know, it's interesting, the thing around, you know, I think Welsh Government is well known for setting up groups to address an issue. I think sometimes when you need to make change happen, a smaller team might be more effective, and thinking of that team. And there is neurology around that, isn't there? Around, you know, up to 15 people who are trusted to have the same vision of what you're trying to achieve, and then a wider group beyond that of 150 people or so, give or take, max. But, you know, the herding cats thing can be tricky otherwise in that sort of middle space. So good luck to you on that. We'll be watching with close interest. Doris, I'm going to come back to you, because one of the main themes, obviously, of the report is equality and diversity for all sorts of very, very obvious and important reasons. And you specialise in cultural labour, especially around diversity and inclusion. And you've worked with major organisations like the BFI, the British Film Institute, on how to remove barriers to access and inclusion. Mm-hmm. Could you share a bit with us, please? What have you learned is most effective in widening access? Bearing in mind what you've heard today, you know, I appreciate you're based out of the University of Glasgow. You may not have Wales's, you know, day-to-day experience at your fingertips. That's absolutely fine. But are there examples that organisations in Wales could learn from to improve their kind of everyday diversity practice?
Yes, I think for me, the main thing in the past years in screen industries in the UK, and I think that's Wales, that's Scotland, that is England as well, is to understand that there are two different kinds of diversity interventions. And based on a review that I've done for the British Film Institute, we've called those empowering interventions on the one hand, and transforming interventions. Now, those are two of those concepts, Aria, that you said to explain. It's quite easy. Empowering interventions are those where you take a person from a group that's underrepresented in the workforce and say, something's missing, you need a leg up, you need hand, you need help to get into that job. And very often the phrase that's used is, you need support to get onto the level playing field. I'll come to that level playing field in a minute, but these typically those initiatives are mentoring schemes, training schemes, and so on. So those empowering interventions are really, really important because they do change when they're done well. They do change the career and the work prospect of people. What we need to do there is we need to get a lot better in understanding which ones work and why and which ones don't. So that's about evaluation. And that's also about sharing where we don't want the evaluation in the public realm, which many organizations don't, that's fine, but at least share it with your sector colleagues and your sector peers so that the sector can learn from itself. So that's one of the first things. The second one is what I've called transforming interventions, where we have a closer look and we realize that that level playing field is not at all level at the moment, and where we change it to make it more level. And those are interventions, for instance, where Michelle outlined that, where we take particular funding pots and tie funding to certain diversity targets, for instance. The BFI does that with their diversity standards, which, by the way, also covers training. So it's not like training and diversity are absolutely interlinked. And you can fulfill some of the requirements of the BFI standards by saying my production will train new showrunners from Asian minority backgrounds. So there is a very close link of those. And I think for me, one of the campaign paths that I'm on at the moment as an academic is to say, okay, we need to understand those two different types of interventions and the balance we need between them. Empowering initiatives, which we focused on a lot so far, are not going to cut it on their own. So there needs to be a balance between the two.
Okay, that's really interesting and good stuff to make us all think about. Interested in the audience's reaction to that distinction as well. Do please share in the chat if you'd like to. I'm conscious of time. One of the challenges of moderating and sharing a conversation like this over an hour and a half is there's always more that we could be talking about, and we will be finishing in about 20 minutes time. But we've had some really great questions from people in the chat and the Q&A. There's one from Robin Williams Wilkinson, who should establish the screen strategy? So I'd like to sort of, Lynard, could I come to you with that first, please? What would be a good process? Because obviously I'll just finish my question. It's not kind of just a document, is it, at the end? It's got to be something that is embedded in everybody's heads, but also in what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. So it's got to be done in a participatory and empowering way. So the process matters as much as the end thing. How would that feel a good process and a good result for you?
I think that the report actually points this out, is that there are so many different stakeholders who need to be involved in this, that there does need to be a leading body, if you like, to put that strategy in place, because all those strands need to be brought together from schools to FE and HE into entry level, into the industry, into all then the different roles that are available. With the danger of piling too much work onto Creative Wales, what I feel is that because, for example, you know, the different members of the team deal with the different ministers across the different sectors, is that to draw together education and skills and funding, all the important kind of structures that are going to be needed. It's a huge task. That's the only thing. I don't, you know, it really is to bring everything together so that everybody can identify their needs and see where they're all joined up. It's a bit of a strategic jigsaw puzzle, I would say. But I think that a willingness for everybody who's involved in the field to feed in and to be a part of it would go a long way to being able to put a meaningful strategy together. But it is a big task.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that. And the sort of the personalities of the people who are doing it is really important in terms of engaging as well, you know, enabling people to engage in a way that they wish to. Michelle, have you got examples of good strategies that you could tell us about and share, and where strategy processes you think, oh, that's been an absolute corker and brilliant, and oh gosh, that bombed, don't do that?
I would say, and I think I've mentioned this before, and a few of you others have too on the panel, it's about having those partnerships with various stakeholders. So you can't do everything, this is the thing. So you have to really work out what stakeholder is going to bring you the best and the most benefit. And we have a lot of relationships with people who find new talent, people who train talent, people who train and develop senior talent, and we bring them in and we use, and so for the people that have been trained, have gone through certain processes with accredited companies that we really value, we then put them forward and they go to meet other independents. And I think as well, within this role, we really want to, and I think Doris touched on this, we really want to empower, we want to empower independents to be able to run their business and sustain themselves. So therefore, if you just feel like you're not getting a look in, this is a way of enabling you to push yourself forward. And I think with the 20% in production, the target in production, we really want to ensure that companies are rethinking how they're going to bring talent into their companies, and they won't get commissioned if they don't change the way that they're thinking. So it's a two-pronged attack. It's working with stakeholders who can deliver what we need, and also having partnerships with independent companies, our suppliers, and the talent to ensure that there's a matching up of people, and people now are able to say, oh, I can go to and get this producer director, or I can go and get this runner from this particular place. And that's really how we're working.
Thank you. Let's extend that a little bit more, because in response to the question that we set for everybody, Lewis in the chat has highlighted how important it is that investment encourages and supports bridging the gap between academia and industry too. And this would help with that sort of mentoring and help better prepare students for life in the industry after graduation, prevent the area losing talent to Bristol, Manchester or London post-graduation. Can I ask the panel, and I'm going to come Doris first to you and then to Jodie, please, about thoughts on how to do that. And I know that Chris Duffy also in the chat has highlighted that Cardiff and Vale College has had an employer advisory board for creative industries as a platform for engagement with the sector for almost 6 years. Chris, that's great. And it'd be great to hear more about that and what sort of impact that's had. So perhaps, you know, that's something that you could share with us as well. But Doris, could I come to you first with that question?
Sorry, I did actually get lost now between the two chat and the...
Sorry, yeah. So
which one from the chat are you trying to?
How is it, how can we make sure that investment encourages and supports bridging the gap between academia and industry? Ideas from you on how to do that really effectively.
Bridging from working in academia or from...
Preparing students for life in the industry after graduation, that sort of bit there. So we keep people here and we don't lose them either to Bristol or to Manchester or to London or wherever.
I think small nations actually have an advantage there, because both Wales and Scotland at the moment actually have much more progressive overall agendas for what sustainable and inclusive and well-being living might look like. So fronting that and then putting money where mouth is, to be honest, really making sure that the work environments that are being designed and that are being lived in everyday reality are inclusive. That is going to keep a lot of people. Where we have done research with Welsh companies, the feedback was that this was pre-COVID, I have to say, that the work was there, and that key to retaining people was to provide those sustainable work relations, and that people did value that and value that more than a larger city like Manchester, let alone London.
That's interesting. And that, does that help compensate for sort of very short contracts? I mean, it can't compensate for it, but it helps offset it.
To be honest, a number of the companies that we spoke to didn't actually have that short contract problem because they weren't necessarily film production companies. And again, when we were looking across the breadth of the screen industries and in the data that Faye and Ruth presented, post-production, for instance, and games have a different employment structure. Mm-hmm. They're not so dependent on, you know, just a contract of just a few months or weeks. So there is a different employment system there, and these ideas are workable within that.
Okay, thank you. Jody, I mean, I know you talked before about sort of that large group of stakeholders that you've already got engaged in the conversation. This is a particular move when we can, a place where we can lose people, can't we? Can you talk us a little bit more about what you're thinking at Creative Wales already?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I said earlier on, one of the first questions you asked really about, you know, if I had a magic wand, what would we do tomorrow? And it's about having a clear, you know, clear progression routes for people through the industry. So I think it's about demonstrating to the talent we have in Wales what the opportunities are, you know, and making sure that those opportunities are sustainable, really. So I think, you know, and also having upskilling. You know, somebody's mentioned in the chat about, you know, a lot of learning, and some of the best learning is done on the job. So, you know, making sure that we've got initiatives in place that people can learn on the job, and people can upskill, and people can take that next step, you know, moving from, you know, one grade to another grade in the production chain, for example. So, you know, I think it's about looking at a breadth and you know, a mixture of interventions really, and just making sure that we've got the investment to do that. But as part of the mapping, you know, what we want to do is look at what training is out there and where the gaps are in the training. You know, it's not just about what the skills needs are, it's what we've got to meet those gaps. So I think that's part of it for me.
And I know that on the Do poll, somebody's highlighted the importance of having permanent structures like national film schools, national broadcasters and universities for growing skills too. Is there anything in that sort of institutional makeup which is missing that we need to plug a gap with? Jodie, I'll come to you and then to Lynyrd, please.
Say that again, sorry.
So somebody's highlighted the importance of having permanent structures like film and TV schools, national broadcasters, universities for growing skills. Is there anything in that sort of institutional range that is missing?
Do you know, I'm not sure really. I think we need to do this piece of work, because I'm hoping that will throw out some of the gaps in provision. Okay. I don't necessarily think we do at kind of the HEFE level. I think there's lots of stuff going on. I think it's just, it's fragmented more than anything.
It's you know, head down doing it rather than connecting more broadly.
Yeah.
Okay, Lynyrd, anything that you can see?
It strikes me that the broadcasters in Wales, S4C we know from working with them, are very aware of skills gaps, plugging those gaps in terms of their requirements as a broadcaster, as well as working with the sector to develop and make sure that obviously the trained staff are working on commissions for them. But, you know, the BBC in Wales and ITV in Wales have trainee schemes. They have trainee journalists, and Michelle referred earlier to the Fast Track Factual, which of course is with S4C and Channel 4. So I think that any increased activity in that line from broadcasters will always be welcome, because as part of, you know, the essential part of the supply chain, the sector will always need to be making sure that they provide what the broadcasters need.
Okay, thank you. There's another question around diversity. So Kimberly in the chat has asked about strategies for diversity, along with setting targets for supporting more diverse individuals and projects. What steps are you taking to affect cultural change to ensure that those individuals thrive? One of the things highlighted in the report was, you know, freelancers being parents and carers, obviously, and having like many of us, juggling all sorts of competing priorities. So childcare, mental health provision, and ensuring that new talent are actually able to sustain themselves financially off the industry if they do get their foot in the door. So Michelle, could I come to you with that, please? What sort of, it's the other stuff, isn't it, around the kind of technical support that enables people also to make a living from it, and for that to be something which is sustainable in the long term?
You know, it's we're in an industry now that's moved from, you know, job for life to incredibly freelance. I don't know if you were to ask me that question when I was 25, would I come into the industry knowing that I'd have to be a freelancer and not know when I'm going to be working from the next? I don't know. I mean, I've spoken to some of my younger colleagues and that's the norm. So there's an expectation that they're going to be working, an expectation that they're not. What tends to happen is that younger people then stay home for longer because they can't afford to move. And what tends to happen is that, you know, people think, okay, I'm going to put off having children at the moment, or I'm going to put off doing stuff because I really want to get ahead in my career. I think it's working with companies that have a similar kind of aspiration to you. And I know it's difficult because when you're in an area where there's a limited amount of companies to work for, or even broadcasters, it's very difficult to find someone who will think the same. But I think it's about creating maybe a sort of lobby, not a lobby group, but a group, a networking group. So you can sort of talk about best practice, and between you and going to organisations such as Creative Wales or to S4C or to BBC Wales, and just saying, look, we really want to work this way. And I mean, one of the things that I was very proud of was to help with job sharing, just job sharing for mainly for women, actually, who had other caring responsibilities, whether it was children or elderly parents. And they were able to job share on a quite senior level. So, you know, sort of your editors or your series producers. And that's worked quite effectively. And there are groups that solely do that. So there are so many different Facebook groups, so many organizations that you can work with to, you know, talk about best practice, talk about how do you approach, because, you know, if companies and broadcasters like solutions, they don't like the problem. So if you come and they say, look, this is a problem, but I've got the solution, there's much more of a sort of potential of take up. But it's not an easy question to answer. There is no kind of, you know, this is the right answer. I just think we just need to, as us women up on this panel, is to ensure that best practices are used when people are going for roles, when people are being considered, and not to sort of dismiss because, oh, someone's just had a baby, or, you know, because I've heard that before and I had to take them up when I was working in an office and just thought, what did you say? You know, have you asked her? Is she ready to come back? If she wants to come back, then she may want to come back early. You can't assume. And so I think there's a lot of that still, even though we think we're in an industry where it's moved on, there is a lot of that. But I do feel that it's about creating those networks of support for you, and, you know, and working out how you best lobby.
That's interesting. And I'm glad I'm not asking easy questions. Good. That's good. The other thing I wanted to ask is, do those sorts of groups exist already in Wales, or are they kind of broad UK-wide or kind of sector-wide, global European-wide conversations? Because, you know, there are obviously different targets in terms of that lobbying, whether it's DCMS or whether it's Welsh Government, for instance. You'd need to know the granularity of what you're dealing with, and to, you know, build those relationships as well.
Sure. I wouldn't know, so I have to confess, I wouldn't know what's happening in Wales per se, but I do think that there are enough talented people working in Wales who had obviously gone through similar experiences. And sometimes it's about setting up. When we set up the talent forum, there were six of us, and now there was, I think, nearly 100. So it happens and it has an impact. So I think it's worthwhile just you know, and also maybe some, you know, some of the sort of organisations with Wales, you know, highlight the ones that are doing really well. I mean, yeah. I'd like to know companies that are doing really well. I'd like to know good practice, because we all use it and it's sharing good practice. If you want us to come down and talk to you, I wish we could come down. I'd love to go to Wales.
Come over. Michelle, we prefer come over to Wales rather than come down to Wales. Come over.
Come over. Okay, come over, come down, come across. I don't mind. I'd just like to be there. You know, I think it is about taking some control of what's happening to your industry in the area that you're in, whatever that industry may be. I mean, we've talked about television, but there's the gaming industry, there's, you know, there's post-production and obviously film. And so there are so many other areas of creativity that are probably having similar kinds of conversations. And it's just about aligning with those and really applauding good practice.
And there needs to be sort of cross-pollination between them too.
Absolutely. I think,
you know, there's a famous phrase, I imagine, not only in Wales, which is good practice doesn't travel well. So more of that. So I'd just like to offer our platforms at the IWA, and particularly the Welsh Agenda online, for articles and suggestions and good ideas and good examples about things where this is working well. Do please use it. We have a really good reach. I'm conscious of time. I'm conscious also we haven't got to all of the questions that people have raised, and it's never possible. So I do apologise, it's the way it goes. Deborah has asked, is training and skills a red herring because senior and established people in the industry say they learnt on the job? So is forcing marginalised groups to train or build up skills sending people down cul-de-sacs? That's something we're not going to be able to unpick, I'm afraid, this afternoon. And Griff in the chat would also be interested in the panel's views on B2B business-to-business video production as demand grows for online video content. Is this considered part of the film, TV and games industry? It appears to have relatively little resource and attention and maybe a bit of a silo despite producing high quality content. Jodie, that's something I think for you to be aware of. And there's a question from Robin, who works at the Senedd, which is, to what extent does the Welsh Government include skills and training requirements in its funding offers for media productions? So that's an interesting thing for you to pick up on. But we are running out of time, and I pride myself on generally finishing on time, more or less. So I've really enjoyed this afternoon's conversation. Sometimes when you're not deep into anything, into the particular topic, but sort of sitting above it, you learn a great deal, and I hope, I certainly have, and I hope many of you today with us have too. Thank you to all of our panellists today, to Ruth, to Faye, to Lynyrd, to Doris, to Jodie and Michelle. Jochenvar, we're really grateful for your time and your insight and for the conversation that's enabled today. Our thanks also to the University of South Wales for sponsoring the IWA's media audit, and to all of our colleagues at S4C, BBC, ITV Cymru Wales, Cardiff University, Ofcom and Clostwyld for their contributions as well towards these events. I'd really like to thank everybody else who's attended this afternoon. I know 3 o'clock is a tricky time of day for people sometimes. It is for me, I always need a cup of tea. I really do want to emphasise that this is the beginning of this next stage of the conversation. We're really clear at the IWA that there hasn't been the kind of improvement to the media landscape in Wales that we would have hoped for since 2015 in our last media audit. We know more needs to be done, and we're setting out the shape of what that should be. As I've said before, we very much work in partnership, and we want the details of that to be developed in partnership with those who work in media and policy. So we really do want to hear from you. Please do continue to use the DoPoll. If you haven't got anything springing into your head right now, hang on to the link and put something in. It'll remain open for a while, and we'll share via our follow-up emails and on Twitter. And at the end of our 4 events, there'll be a page on our website that brings together all of the presentations and so forth for people to see. There's still time to sign up for the other 2 media events in the series. Just go to iwa.wales, follow the links on our event pages. And if you'd like to receive early notification of all IWA events, do please join us as a member. We are extremely good value. We don't represent a sector, trade or interest group, and we are very proud of our role convening important and detailed discussions across sectors. And there's never been a more important and a more urgent need for an independent body to do just that, as far as the screen sector is concerned. Really looking forward to carrying on the conversation tomorrow, which will be about news, and also over the weeks and months to come. Jochenvar, everybody, thank you very much.